UAB Medcast is an ongoing medical education podcast. The UAB Division of Continuing Education designates that each episode of this enduring material is worth a maximum of 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit. To collect credit, please visit uabmedicine.org/medcast and complete the episode's post-test.
Welcome to UAB Medcast, a continuing education podcast for medical professionals. Bringing knowledge to your world, here's Melanie Cole.
Our topic today is diabetic foot wounds. Here to tell us about that is Dr. Brent Haverstock. He's the Director of Podiatry at the UAB Advanced Limb Preservation at the Russell Clinic. Dr. Haverstock, explain a little bit about what happens in the diabetic foot.
With diabetes, there's a number of long-term complications that can develop. One that we see in the foot and the lower extremity is peripheral neuropathy. That is where the nerve is involved and damaged by prolonged high blood sugar levels. Over time, an individual loses sensation in their foot, so they lose that gift of pain. So somebody without diabetes steps on a marble or steps on a sewing needle, of course, they're going to feel that and they're going to identify it and look for it. Somebody with diabetes would step on the same sort of object, not feel it at all. It would enter the foot, and that offers a portal of entry for bacteria and subsequently a foot infection. Other changes that we see over time are changes to the structure of the foot. There's some imbalances in the muscle. Strength in the lower extremity, which results in hammer toes, that creates prominences on the bottom of the foot. These high areas of pressure subsequently develop callus. Because of, again, that neuropathy or that loss of the gift of pain in the bottom of the foot, prolonged walking and standing results in increased pressure in those areas. Over time, they can blister underneath of that callus, and that's how a diabetic foot ulceration can develop.
Tell us how it's classified and what is the clinical presentation for other providers that might be noticing they're working with their diabetic at a well visit and something that they would notice.
There's a number of different classification systems out there, and some of them are quite elaborate and can become quite complex just within a clinical setting. So really what we look at are different risk classifications. So if somebody just strictly has a diagnosis of diabetes with no complications, they're really at a very low risk. There is some studies that have demonstrated that because of increased blood sugar levels, that those individuals, if they did have a cut or an abrasion or an ingrown toenail, could go on to a complication that otherwise somebody else may not have, but they're at a very low risk factor. Somebody that has lost that protective sensation on the bottom of their foot, but they haven't developed any structural abnormalities. There's no corns or calluses that have developed on the foot are at a moderate risk. And then we start to see folks into a high-risk classification where they start to develop the prominences in the feet, the hammer toes, the prominent metatarsal heads, bunions, areas where there's increased pressure. Again, that callus forms, and with that loss of the protective sensation in the foot, they don't know that something is happening underneath. Again, a blister that opens up. When a doctor's examining the foot, they want to check and see how the sensation is on the bottom of the foot. There's a couple easy ways it can be done with a cotton swab. If they do have access to a monofilament, they can do a monofilament testing. When they examine the bottom of the foot and they see a callus, if the callus formation demonstrates that there's areas of bleeding underneath, then that's a sign that there's been too much pressure in that area, repetitive trauma, and that's really where it's becoming an urgent basis to get the individual in to see somebody that can address not only that callus, make sure there isn't an underlying ulceration that's developed, but also get them into appropriate shoes and insoles and that type of thing to offload the pressure from that area.
Then assess for us the appropriateness of specific treatments that you would try once you detect what's going on.
Well, again, it really depends on the stage that we're at. So if we see somebody that's high risk, they have a number of deformities in the foot, a number of structural deformities, and they're at a high risk of developing an ulceration, those can be accommodated with proper footwear. So we refer folks to a proper shoe store where they can be assessed for extra depth shoes. Within UAB, we utilize our own folks in the Spain Rehabilitation Center where we can send them over and they can be assessed and fitted for proper diabetic shoes and an insole to protect the bottom of the foot from those pressures. We can also offer reconstructive foot surgery. So there's different procedures that we can do to correct the structure of the foot to alleviate those areas of prominence. If we see somebody that has developed a wound, then there's a whole stratum of different options that are available based on how the wound presents itself.
And I understand that it is based on how the wound presents itself. But, you know, the science of wound care has advanced so much. Doctor, speak a little bit about maybe the old myth of let the air get at it, or do you keep these wounds open? Do you keep their foot up? Because for other providers working with these people on a regular basis, this is great information.
Right. And it's really still the tenets of good wound care is what we're after when we're first assessing these folks and then coming up with a clinical plan. So the main factors are, is the foot infected? Is there a sign clinically of an infection in that wound? If there is, we want to start the patient on a broad spectrum antibiotic, but we want to make sure that we get an adequate deep tissue sample to identify the infecting organism. We want to do a proper vascular assessment on the patient to determine if there is underlying vascular disease. And that starts just simply in the clinic or the office with a proper assessment, checking to see if you can palpate the dorsalis pedis or posterior tibial pulses in the foot. Is there hair growth still on the digits or on the top of the foot? Have there been changes in toenails? Is there a delay in the capillary refill time? So when we're pushing on the skin and letting go, is it filling back up with blood or is it quite sluggish and slow? Do the patients have any symptoms of rest pain or claudication when they're walking? And if there is any of those, then we look at either non-invasive vascular studies or getting the patient in to see a vascular surgeon quite urgently. Good wound debridement, so removing all the non-viable tissue from around the margins and within the wound to allow for the peripheralation of proper healing tissue or granulation tissue. And then one of the most important factors is offloading. So getting the patient into some form of offloading device, whether that's a post-operative shoe with an accommodative insole, right up to a total contact cast, which is still the mainstay of management of these wounds, but it really is an individual basis on what the patient can tolerate and what their demands are as to what type of offloading. But offloading is paramount if we're going to get these wounds to heal up.
How would you like other providers to guide their diabetic patients in prevention of diabetic foot ulcers as far as the poor circulation or uncontrolled blood sugar? What would you like them to know?
Those are all important factors. And I think the main thing is really identifying problems as they occur. So we really want to work closely with patients and teaching them of the things that they can look for. Simple things like having a family member inspect their feet daily for them, checking the bottoms, making sure there's no areas that look like there's increased areas of pressure or an abrasion or a wound or an infection that is starting. We educate all our patients on what we call the diabetic foot flu. So somebody that may have an ulceration that's developed on the bottom of the foot, and they feel flu-like, so they have a loss of appetite, they maybe have a low-grade fever, they just don't feel right. They often come in describing that they felt like they've had the flu for the last couple of days, and it's not the flu, it's actually an infection that's starting in the foot. So anytime that a patient or an individual experiences those type of symptoms, we make sure that we educate them to have themselves or a family member inspect their feet to make sure that that's not the source of why they're feeling this flu-like type of symptoms. So that's really the important thing with patients is the proper recognition of when these things may be happening and things to watch for to prevent them from happening. And again, that comes with simple measures such as proper fitting footwear, insoles inside of the shoe to offload areas where there is increased pressure, seeing somebody professionally to have foot care done, their toenails cut properly, the thickening of the toenails addressed, any corns or calluses on their feet that would be potential areas of risk to be taken down and debrided properly by a trained professional.
And what can a referring physician expect from your team at UAB Medicine?
We have a very comprehensive approach. So if it's somebody that's being referred in strictly for an evaluation, they haven't had any complications to date, but they're at a risk for it, we'll take the time to assess the feet, explain to the patient what our findings are, offer, again, footwear or offloading insoles. If it has been a recurrent problem that's healed up in the past, but we're still dealing with some of the structural or mechanical problems within the foot, we can offer reconstructive foot surgery. If it is a wound that they've developed, then it's a very much a multidisciplinary approach with podiatry and vascular surgery at either end of the spectrum with what we call a toe and flow model of patient care. So the vascular surgeons are making sure that there's adequate circulation down to the foot, and we're really the landscape artists on the foot, dealing with whatever problem is down there, whether it be an ulceration or a structural problem, or even just an offloading issue with an area of high risk. And then we have other players within the team, infectious disease, so they're helping guide on the appropriate management of antibiotics, whether that's for a soft tissue or bone infection. If we have patients that we've had to operate on for a large infected area in the foot and they have a large soft tissue defect, we'll often work with plastic surgery to see if there is some sort of free flap that they can do to the area to provide us with coverage or use a negative pressure wound therapy. We also work closely with orthopedic surgery, so if somebody's developed an unstable foot secondary to diabetes, there's options that they can do for a reconstruction of that as well. So it's really, it takes a quarterback with the management of these folks, but there's a whole group of people around that are imperative to make sure that they do well. And that even goes right back to intensive medical management of these folks. And there's a recent study from England where they had a very large patient population with diabetes within their database through their community health. And there was 26,000 individuals that had a first-time diabetic foot ulcer that had presented within this health network in the UK. And within 1 year, 5% of the individuals that had a diabetic foot ulcer had passed away. And within 5 years, that was 42% of individuals that presented a first time with a diabetic foot ulcer had passed away. So it's certainly, we know it's not the ulcer that is the cause of death, but it really demonstrates that there really needs to be intensification of their overall medical management once they've reached the point where they have developed a diabetic foot ulcer.
Really important information and such a good point that you just made, Dr. Haverstock. Thank you so much for being with us today and sharing your expertise. A community physician can refer a patient to UAB Medicine by calling the MIST line at 1-800-UAB-MIST. That's 1-800-822-6478. You're listening to UAB Medcast. For more information on resources available at UAB Medicine, you can go to uabmedicine.org/physician. That's uabmedicine.org/physician. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.